Welcome to another Protocol 80 Over Coffee podcast.
Greetings!
We promise this one will be anywhere from stellar to mediocre, or vice versa, mediocre to stellar, as I mentioned in my tweet, if you follow me, at Jake Hercio.
Self-promotion.
You can follow me at DM Chemic. We might as well go around the horn. And Donnie, you're at?
At DJ Nina 9. At D Chemic.
Okay.
That whole thing is my Twitter handle. At DJ Nina 9 at D Chemic.
And it's also about saying
it's all spelled out.
Yeah, right. So there's no actual at symbol. It's the letters A T.
Okay. Some exciting news this week, or some exciting stories possibly. We won't talk about the actual Super Bowl, the game itself. But let's talk about the commercials. Prior to the Super Bowl, there was a lot of talk about social integration with the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Some people even went out and called it the Social Bowl commercials. I watched the commercials as closely as I could have. I did have my two children running around a little bit, so it was a little difficult to pay attention to the commercials. But I did look back at some of them afterwards online. Fox posted all of the commercials there and also allowed the users to rate them.
Mm-hmm.
So, to my surprise, I found that the Super Bowl commercials were far less social than I really expected. On any given day of the week, I can watch a sitcom if I don't watch the DVR'd version and fast forward through the commercials. I will see, find us on Facebook or
right.
blah, 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 facebook.com/whatever the brand is, sometimes prior to or before they would even promote their own website.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see really any of that in the Super Bowl commercials. And I thought, in particular, the tech companies would take advantage of that. They, for the most part, are aware of the power of social, in particular, Living Social and Groupon.
Yep.
We can slightly touch on Groupons. Not only did they not, use much social implementation. Yeah, but they also failed miserably at getting a new following. People did talk about them, but definitely some bad press there. They used Tibet and saving the whales kind of for...
As a joke.
As advertising, yeah. As a joke type of thing.
Idiots!
Didn't go over well. They claimed... They wanted to say it was a tongue-in-cheek type of advertising thing, but I think most people didn't see it as that. Most people saw it as very politically incorrect. Incorrect?
Incorrect? Or?
I don't think incorrect is a word.
Neither do I, but good job, though. Making it up.
I did notice Bud Light mentioned their Facebook page. They didn't say it, but it was on the end there. Mercedes-Benz is using Twitter in a unique way where they're having like a race, and the racers are like powered by tweets type of thing.
Right.
Did you guys hear about that or follow that at all?
I'd be lying if I said I did.
I saw a headline.
It's not something I'm very interested in, but it's fairly unique. And then some of the other stuff was, getting lost here. Really before and after is where social really came into play. One thing big this year was ad previews. I'm sure that all of you guys have seen had seen the Volkswagen commercial.
Yep.
Prior to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things that the that the brands did this year was release previews of the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl commercials are so big now that people are willing to watch a preview of a commercial.
What do you think about spending millions of dollars for advertising time that you need to advertise beforehand?
My take on this is you're paying what for the Super Bowl ad, but the prior, the before that you put on YouTube is free. You're not paying for that YouTube time, and people are sharing that over and over. So really, that was what I saw as the big social aspect of this year's commercials.
But I guess my question really comes down to, is it worth investing in a Super Bowl ad? Is the ad time on the Super Bowl worth it? If now all the advertisers have to advertise it ahead of time as well.
I would say no, but my only question is, are they popular socially because they are Super Bowl commercials in the first place? And we kind of have a higher...
I think so.
Perception of what a Super Bowl commercial will be. Obviously, that's when everyone sits down to see what the ads are going to be for that year. So I don't know if you could just do an online promotion and say, this is our Super Bowl promotion. It's not going to be in the Super Bowl, but...
What if you said it was your Super Bowl ad and you never really had a Super Bowl ad?
Then you'd be a liar. But
maybe you'd be a liar with the most awesomest online campaigns.
True.
You didn't have to drop a dime.
Mm-hmm. My personal opinion is that if it wasn't going to be a Super Bowl commercial, that it wouldn't have taken off. I looked at the views prior to the Super Bowl. I don't know if it was the day before, and there were like 9 million views. So that's another... It's not the amount that you get from the Super Bowl.
Right.
But at the same time, that's a lot for something that you spend 10 minutes posting.
Right.
And then that was probably much more talked about.
Yep.
The pre-release of it was probably much more talked about than the actual ad would have been if they wouldn't have dropped a hint early.
Yes, right. I agree.
And I think there's a lot to be said for exclusivity, especially with something like that. Like, if people know that they're getting a sneak peek of something that they won't get to see for another day, that's kind of a big deal. So that helps to spread things a little bit quicker.
And the other social aspect that I saw, aside from the lack of the use in the commercial, was after the commercial aired, Audi in particular urged the use of the pound progress IS tag to create a trending topic about basically about their brand. Some people say it was a stab at the Mercedes thing. I guess you could see it as that. But and then the talk of Groupon. I did want to mention that they did remove the commercial, so it's no longer in my post. An error occurs. So I'm sorry about that if you didn't get to see it. We can recreate it someday. Protocol 80 will act it out.
Right. I think we'll look around as well for somebody who may have downloaded the commercial in anticipation of it being removed and see if we can post an update.
It's kind of interesting. The past 2 weeks we've had stories about people doing kind of dumb things in their advertising. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this week's story paid off as well for Groupon as the previous weeks did, because it was mostly negative feedback that I saw this time around. So last week, of course, being the Kenneth Cole tweet that Donnie wrote about.
I think the only saving grace for Groupon was that they did donate money, or they would do matching donations to both Tibet and Saving the Whales type of thing. So, you know, kind of pulls them out a little bit. I do think that the brands failed a little bit at captivating the audience there, and, you know, having some sort of contest that was like, you know, watch our Super Bowl ad and then, I don't know, host some sort of contest on Facebook or Twitter. I think people would pretty easily go to their machines, or they have a laptop sitting in front of them already,
or even
just
phone.
Go to their phone.
Yep.
I think that they failed there, and it was a big, I guess, opportunity for them. So that was kind of disappointing. Honestly, I think that there was probably more talk about the Christina Aguilera screw-up of the national anthem or the Black Eyed Peas halftime show, which I personally thought was bad.
So did I.
I have heard, though, that through surround sound it was better, which I actually mentioned to my wife while watching it.
I have 7.1 surround in my family room where I was watching it, and it, to me, sounded good.
Really?
The whole thing sounded good, and I was impressed. So you guys can shut up. It may have been terrible and not good, but it sounded okay to me.
Okay.
My favorite commercial, I know everyone out there was wondering what my favorite commercial was. Mm-hmm. There was a few. I don't think any of them really stood out as, oh, that was just so amazing. The Career Builder one where the guy's in the parking lot, the monkeys drive up next to him, he can't get out of his car. Again, that one doesn't work on my on the blog, so that's good. It did work when I posted it.
Sure.
And the Bridgestone commercial, the Reply All Bridgestone commercial.
Yeah, I like that.
That was funny.
That was pretty funny. The mustache was probably the best part. What favorites did you guys have? Is there anything that stood out for you?
My favorite was the Groupon one. Yeah, not really. I'm just kidding. My favorite was probably the Reply All one.
Yeah, I'd probably have to go with that, too. I like the VW one, but I saw that before the Super Bowl, so it was kind of out of the bag by the time the Super Bowl rolled around.
I would have liked the Reply All one more if before you had said Bridgestone, I actually remembered that it was a Bridgestone.
Right.
Commercial.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that they really conveyed why Bridgestone was part of that, and really all it was that he had to go around and take everyone's computers and was on driving a car using Bridgestone tires, I guess.
I think that's another thing to think about when you're talking about the value of those Super Bowl ads. Like, a lot of them, they tell a story or something, and it's not very obvious what the product is or the service is.
Kind of lose what the brand is.
And you spend all that money to do that. Right. So
I don't generally have, or I've never really had, the Reply All incident happen to me. I have had the, if I press D and I plan on sending an email to Dave or Donnie, it goes to someone else that might start with D. Maybe not double checking that. That's happened before. It can be embarrassing, but luckily it's never turned out bad for me.
Good.
So
is that it for your first post?
That's it.
Okay, I think I'm up next, and my first post this week was kind of a discussion or my thoughts on native versus HTML5 mobile applications, which is probably putting you to sleep, the first sentence. But basically, my idea was if you're a small business and you're looking at developing a mobile application, especially for phones, would it be better for you to focus on native applications, so like developing an app for the iPhone or Android, or doing an HTML5 application? Just to kind of cut to the chase, my idea overall is that because HTML5 is such a rich technology, you're better off to develop a mobile website or something using that web application. And in most cases, when you think of a lot of the popular Facebook app or mobile applications like Facebook, in those cases specifically, there's a good chance that that company or business or brand already had a mobile website in place. I did note that it was kind of interesting that a lot of people associate the birth of the modern app with the iPhone in 2007. And back then, the iPhone actually didn't launch with an app store. They were planning on pushing mobile web applications, but because they had a huge outpouring of requests for native support for like an SDK for the iPhone, they actually went ahead and made the iPhone SDK and the App Store and stuff like that. But it was their original intention to do just web applications. And some other phones did that as well, like the Palm Pre WebOS. That's all web-based. So I think that more and more it makes more sense to focus more on a web application using technologies like HTML5, at least as a jump-off point. And then if you realize down the line by reviewing analytics that you have a lot of users that are using iPhones or iPads, it might be worth it to tailor a different application experience to that one platform. But if you can, you know, kind of hit everything with one shot using a website then, or a web application, then I don't see why you wouldn't go that way.
I agree 100%. I think from a small business standpoint, when you've got a set budget to work with, and it's usually less of a budget than you need, that going the web route is going to be the most flexible and allow you to be kind of cross-platform without having to develop the native app. You can do some more things by developing a native app,
right?
More things than you can do with HTML5, but HTML5 is such a rich experience, like you said, Dave, that I think you're like 98% of the way there to do that.
The example I gave in my post was comparing the Facebook app on my phone to just going to the touch.facebook.com. And truthfully, you don't really miss out on much that I noticed. There are some small things that are like interface things that are unique to the Android development platform. Same thing on the iPhone side of things. But like you said, it's kind of, do you really want to spend all that extra money just to get those little niceties?
Right.
So I think that, I guess in listening to clients talk or other small businesses talk, they are automatically, I guess, drawn towards that application thing just to, I guess, because it's things that they use and they may not even realize whether they're using an application or just the HTML5 experience, but they don't really realize how rich you can make the HTML5 experience to make it so that people don't even really realize they're using an app. I think that most small businesses probably wouldn't really realize much of the difference as long as they can allow their users to purchase and put a or download for free and put an icon on their screen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's one thing I also noted is that one of the plus sides of doing a native app is that there is that app sexiness, because everybody talks about apps. You see about apps in commercials, and we hear about app stores and things like that. So there is some awareness associated with native apps that might not be there for HTML5 apps. But like Josh said, if you do, especially if you market towards your mobile website or mobile application, I think that shouldn't be a problem. So
I agree.
So that was my first post of the week, and I think that brings up Donnie.
Yep. So this week I extended the mobile marketing for small businesses series. This was my sixth post in that series. And what I wanted to talk about in this post was focusing on what a mobile user wants or needs. So we have conversations with clients now that are getting into mobile, and our initial conversation almost always starts with them talking about replicating just about every aspect of their full-blown desktop website mm-hmm. in a mobile site. And we say, well, that is possible to do. Let's put ourselves in a mobile user's shoes for a minute and see what they really want and need. Because if you've ever used a smartphone to do anything with a full-blown website, it can be very frustrating because there's so many options and it's not user-friendly on a phone. It's not touch-friendly. So we try and put ourselves in the shoes of the customer and say, as a customer, most of the time our customers or our prospects are looking for us on their mobile phone to do what? To find a contact person, to remember the name of the person that they're meeting with, to get directions, to get a quick overview of the products and services that they offer so that they're somewhat intelligent when they walk into a meeting.
To see a menu
if it's a restaurant, maybe look for their social links on their mobile site. So some of the things they don't like, complicated photo galleries in Flash and things like that don't work well on a phone. Huge text-heavy pages that you really have to kind of chug through on a smartphone, and too much information at once. So, for instance, instead of showing products, a list of your products with every detail about them in a huge list, show the product name and a picture of it, and then click through to see the description, much like you would do typically on a full desktop website. And then the other thing that that I think is important, and I don't see enough on mobile sites, is a link at the bottom of the mobile site to go to the desktop experience in the event that you have a Droid X or a phone with a higher resolution screen that will maybe let you interact with the full website and get some of the information not available on a mobile site.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that I find frustrating is if something doesn't shrink down to the size and I have to scroll really far left and right, even if I'm holding my Droid horizontally, that's really frustrating for me.
One thing to consider that Donnie talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, was finger friendliness. My biggest pet peeve is just like really small links that are hard to tap on.
So. I would agree.
Yeah, I'd agree there. And sites that have sub-navigation in a drop-down menu.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I don't know why it happens, but I think I find forms that fail more from the mobile than they do from the website, and that's pretty frustrating.
Yeah,
for all of the email marketing lists that I sign up for and subscribe to.
It's at least like a half a dozen a day, right?
Right.
So if you have an email marketing list that you want me to subscribe to, just send me the link and I will subscribe. You might be one of the lucky six of the day.
Right.
Cut to next week when Josh's inbox has been bombarded with hundreds of...
It's already bombarded with everything from Viagra to other things.
Well, at least it's useful stuff.
It's useful.
So that's Donnie's post. I think, Josh, you're back up again.
We are going quick today.
We are.
People are going to be setting aside 45 minutes of their day for this. We don't want to disappoint them.
Well, they can browse our website and our social sites.
That's right.
And like us and follow us.
I was a little disappointed to see Donnie didn't use an animated GIF this week, but maybe next week.
It was a pretty big letdown.
I thought my post was a little weak this week. I'll admit it.
We didn't want to say anything.
It was lovely.
My first post was the first in a series of, I guess, MailChimp training. You could call it...
This is your second post, right?
Well, this is my second post, yeah. But it's, I guess, the first post in that series.
Yeah.
Part one. And I guess it's mainly email marketing, but in particular using the MailChimp platform. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite. I find that it's easiest to use. We'll talk about that in a little bit. This post, I really wanted people to understand what email marketing was. And I think you have to kind of get past that mind frame of any time that I want to send a message, I should be able to send it to my entire list, no matter what it is, no matter how significant or insignificant it is, to thinking of it as permission marketing, the term coined by Seth Godin. And I guess how to think of that is this person is giving you access to someplace where they spend a lot of their time and they're already getting a lot of spam messages. Which is their inbox. I don't like to get tons of emails in my inbox. I already get enough business-related emails to my inbox. So when I'm giving people permission to send me emails, that's what I'm doing. I'm giving them permission to, I guess, responsibly send me emails, right. not to bombard me with emails or send me crap emails that I really don't care to read. So
I think that's the key word, Josh, responsible.
Yes.
Not annoying.
I think you just
what
have to...
What was that?
And not annoying.
What kind of...
And not annoying, Dave!
Yeah, I've heard that one or two times. I think one thing it's important to do is just... If you're thinking about sending something out, just think about receiving that. Everyone's received spam nonsense that they don't like. And if it seems like something you would probably look at and say that, wow, this is not useful and it's just annoying. It's so annoying.
It's so annoying.
That just don't send it out and rework your content that way.
Rework it.
So I guess throughout the series of posts and throughout this post, just you can call it email marketing all you want. But just remember that these people have given you permission to send them updates when you have good updates to send. So build a list and build an actual list. And I think I talked on this subject a couple weeks ago on if you're sending to people that don't really care about your product or service, you might as well just cold call them during dinner.
Right.
It's the same thing. You need to build your list. And I know it's frustrating. It can be slow. But if you're just sending to a list that doesn't care to receive your topics, you might as well not even send it. There's a chance that you're going to get flagged as spam, which is definitely not what you want to do. And that includes if you're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, usually you can have access to the other members' information, whether it's mailing labels or email addresses or whatever. Don't add that entire list to your email marketing account, because while they are the same in like members of the same organization of you as you, that doesn't mean they want to receive emails from you.
Right.
We receive mail from people in the mail, and that's fine. It's not very intrusive, and it doesn't continually come.
Right.
But I think people tend to send a little more email marketing messages than they do mail.
I'd agree.
So really send to people that are interested in your product or service. Clients are fine because you're keeping your clients updated on what you do. But really take that time and try to build that list. Have a sign-up form somewhere on your site, which I don't know that we do right now. We might. But we will soon here in the near future. And just, I guess, build it slowly, even if you're frustrated with the list growth. It will come over a certain amount of time. But, again, we already talked about this. Don't take advantage of their permission. Don't oversend. Don't send something just because you have a thought in your head. Send something because you want to send it. I sign up for lists because... Like I said, I'm interested in the product or service. I want to get coupons. Right. Those are great. I signed up for the Finish Line list because they send coupons.
Yep.
If you say you're going to send coupons at some point. Don't go a couple years without sending one sort of discount to your subscribers. They're expecting it if that's something you promised off the start. And, you know, just don't send 5 to 6 every single day. Right. Try to limit that to when you have something to say.
I like to say, send things that are going to help your customers' lives or your prospects' lives, and then they will actually appreciate it and want to engage with you and learn more. Don't just market to them.
Yeah.
Blast products and services in their face.
And I guess the last piece of this is to use an email marketing service. It helps you get your email actually into the user's inbox because these email marketing services have I guess, relationships with the ISP, so they're not automatically marked as spam
right.
from a certain IP. So you could send to a giant list of 50 to 500,000 or whatever without major issues. It puts everything at the bottom in the footer that's required by the spam acts. So you have an unsubscribe link there automatically. You have your address, your phone number, your company name right in the footer automatically. Using merge tags, it pulls them in there based on what you signed up with in your account. The one email marketing platform that I said I recommend and that what this series of posts is about MailChimp. It's been my favorite. I think it's the easiest to use, and it provides great analytics. Pretty much every email marketing platform that you're going to use nowadays has some sort of analytics on it. Most of them are fairly easy to understand. MailChimp is right up there with, I guess, as useful as analytics as you can get. As long as you're integrating with your Google Analytics, you can see who subscribed, who unsubscribed, how many people opened it, how many people forwarded it, people that tweeted about it. I said, I guess the second most important was the affordability. I think for some small businesses, this is one of the key factors, is affordability. It's very cheap to free. They have been increasing their free subscriber limit since we've been using it. I don't remember what it started out at, but right now it's you can have 2,000 subscribers for free and send out 6,000 messages per month, I believe it was. So that's pretty good for having a free account. There's some things that you do have to upgrade for integration purposes.
You can send 12,000 a month.
Are you sure?
12,000 a month for free, right?
Maybe they bumped it up again.
Did they bump it up again, or was I just incorrect?
They probably bumped it up again. I can't imagine you being wrong.
Never. Well, I was wrong once. But mostly.
So
not.
Up to 2,000 subscribers for a price of free can be sent to 12,000 times.
Yes.
Not all 2,000 of them, but you can send 12,000 emails, basically.
If you are. I would just have one person and then send that one person 12,000 emails.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's probably your best bet.
That's the most practical route, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to get them as a customer at some point, unless it's yourself. Spring break. As a small business just starting out, if you are a small business just starting out, this is going to be plenty of email marketing power for you. So you don't have to worry about the cost there. And even when you do get it up into the paid rates, they're very affordable. Social Pro is an aspect that they have there that's really great. It pulls in their email addresses and gives you social statistics about them, gives you their social, I guess you call it your social power,
graph.
Social graph, how influential your followers are, your subscribers are. If you have someone that's extremely influential that's subscribing to your email blast, you might want to make those people happy. Mm-hmm. They're going to be the ones that are going to tweet out your message or send it to their lists or whatever. It's just pretty great extra knowledge. It gives you demographic stuff, age, gender. And I think one of the important things to remember is that for the most part, people are signing up for these social media sites using the same email that they will sign up for your email.
Right.
So
that
makes sense. And then finally, one of my favorite aspects is just the quirkiness and the funness of it. Freddy the monkey, he's hilarious, and I'm pretty confident that he thinks of all of the stuff he says himself because he is a real monkey that wears a hat, sometimes a scarf.
I'd agree.
So
definitely follow through and check out Josh's post because he has a really nice picture of Freddy the monkey that you can take a look at.
You can print it out and
you can run and tell that.
I think that quirkiness is something that's good when you have a day filled with professionalism,
right.
Professionalism.
Absolutely.
You can get that half hour of just a little bit of silliness while you're getting your job done. That's fine. And I think I even mentioned that if you have nothing to say to me in your email blast, if you make it funny and I actually read it, I might not unsubscribe.
Right.
I don't know if everyone else is like that, but.
Well, it's entertainment that way.
It is entertainment. So it does serve some sort of a purpose.
Right.
So we'll start getting into actually how to create your account and start building your list, templates, subjects, all that jazz. throughout my next post. I post again on Tuesday, so get ready.
I can't wait. My final post of the week was about the new Facebook pages. They just launched a new upgraded version of the Facebook pages. One thing that we run into a lot is there's some confusion, especially with small businesses, whether they should start with a personal profile or a business page and what the difference is. I think that this upgrade kind of helps out a lot with some of those and justifying between one or the other. But first of all, there's an obvious redesign. Again, it's kind of like the new profiles when they got redesigned not too long ago. I think one of my favorite aspects of the redesign is that you have those big image blocks that we're kind of taking advantage of already.
With our foreheads.
If you go to facebook.com/protocol80, you can take a look there.
As if you could pay particular attention to Zach's.
Yeah.
Maybe set it as your desktop.
Right. He would definitely appreciate that.
Like as your desktop computer. Set it as that.
They also did some other things like move common links from the main navigation to the left side.
I don't know if I like that.
I think it's a change. I think it would have been nice if it was that way from the beginning.
Did. Yeah. It's obviously a change.
It's definitely a change.
I'm not going to start like a big protest against it.
Well,
like everyone else does.
That's what I'm saying. Like anytime anything changes.
Hey,
on
I already
Facebook.
Started a group. Change these profile business
them back.
Pages back.
Sorry, I just kicked the table.
Don't worry. My favorite thing absolutely about this is that you can now interact with Facebook as though you were your business page. So when you log in, if you're an administrator of a page and you visit that page, there's a little link that says use Facebook as blah. So if it was me, it would say use Facebook as protocol 80.
Protocol.
As just protocol. And then from there, you can do things like leave comments. And when you do the search, everything is page-based. So I think that's the best way of differentiating between the profile version of Facebook, which is kind of the standard version, and also the business side, which is the profile page. Dottie's throwing some gang signs right now.
Blood.
So I guess that's...
One of my favorite features, Dave.
Yes,
is the notifications when someone posts on your wall.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Right to your email.
Yep.
It's definitely a nice feature that wasn't there before. There is the slight... I guess, issue with the pictures that you can't arrange them and make an awesome, what they call a Facebook hack.
Right. When they originally did the profile redesign, a lot of people had some cool ways of using those images up at the top of the profile to, put in a couple different pictures of yourself and kind of arrange them particularly. But now, I don't know if they're still like that with the profiles.
They are still like that with the profiles.
So you can set them.
You can still do some cool stuff where, I guess, you're taking... basically a large image of your face and you have like the right side of your face is in that tall right bar and then the rest of your parts of your face are in the five pictures on the top.
Yeah.
And then one guy, I think one of the most popular, posted a video where his mouth would actually line up on his wall.
Awesome.
That was pretty snazzy.
Unfortunately, the images up at the top now are random for the business pages. So you can't really get as creative, but you can still do some interesting things there. So
yeah, I think, I'm a little biased, but I think ours looks okay.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty good.
Who doesn't love a good forehead?
Not this guy.
We've had nothing but positive reviews. Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty much it. Go take a look. If you have a business page or any page on Facebook, go take a look and log in. They have a nice tour that you can kind of walk through some of the new features and get accustomed. And hopefully you love it. So that's our last blog post from the week. Before we jump into some of our favorite news topics from the week, I do want to say you can always follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/protocol80. Facebook, of course, we were just talking about. Take a look at our new images up at the top of our Facebook page and give us a like if you want to. That's at facebook.com/protocol80. Of course, you can follow our blog throughout the week. We're at blog.protocol80.com. Leave a comment. We love hearing feedback from the podcast, so if you have any ideas of what you'd like us to talk about in future episodes, leave a comment and we'll be happy to adjust accordingly.
I do want to say thank you to our subscribers. It's
yes,
been growing,
absolutely.
I guess, pretty significantly over the past 3 weeks, and mm-hmm. a little more than I expected, so that's good. Thank you, everyone.
If you haven't subscribed yet, you can go to iTunes and search for Protocol 80 and go ahead and subscribe to the Protocol 80 Over Coffee podcast, and you can get new episodes automatically downloaded to your computer moving forward. So I think that's all of the plugs that I need to do for this week. Donnie, do you want to hit us with a news story.
Yeah, I do.
Do you have one ready?
Yeah, I do.
Let's hear it.
So,
let's hear it.
This fine day, I woke up and I was looking at the Twittosphere on my phone. And if I haven't mentioned before, my favorite thing in the world to do on TweetDeck on my phone is click the home button or the time at the very top of the app and watch all the tweets scroll by, 1,000 tweets a second. Because all night, I follow so many people all night, I've got like 800 tweets that happened that I missed. But one of the ones that I actually caught was that Nokia decided to stop monkeying around and trying to compete with their phone OS, and instead they have chosen to adopt Windows Phone. And it was a kind of a surprise because everyone was pushing them towards Android mm-hmm. because it's flexible and it would kind of let them do what they were looking to do, but it's already kind of done and it's very popular right now. But for whatever reason, they decided to go partner up with Microsoft. And in doing so, their stock price dropped 12% overseas, and it was trending lower in the U.S. as well, and Microsoft was kind of flat. So right. What do you guys think about it?
I think that's kind of interesting. I definitely think Android would be the best way to go. I'm surprised, like Donnie was, to hear that they decided to go with Windows Phone. Josh and I were actually talking this week about Windows Phone on our trip to...
Yeah. We went to a museum.
Yeah.
For a video thing, and I definitely drove 20 miles past, although I've been to the same place several times. I said to Dave, really seems like it's taking a long time to get there,
yeah.
And it turns out that it's because I drove a lot further than I should have.
But that's all right. It gave us more time to talk about our overall lukewarmness about the Windows Phone platform, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and play with it.
Right.
I've seen commercials. And in the commercials, it appears that I don't love the interface, but yeah. It does seem like it's pretty speedy for Windows. I don't know. Have you guys played around with it yet?
I haven't had a chance.
To hit up a Verizon store.
I haven't played around with it at all. And I would say it's probably not a good idea to try and judge performance based on the commercials. Because
I judge right. everything based on commercials.
I don't blame you. It's not smart, so don't do it. But I actually like the interface. And from what I've seen, like it's less operating system like
yeah.
to me to a certain degree. I mean, I'm sure.
Are you comparing this to like Android or old Windows? Old Windows Phone.
Both Android, iPhone. This Android and iPhone have the very app, you know, icons everywhere yeah. kind yep. of thing. Whereas this experience seems different. I mean, I'm sure there's a way to get at that list of apps, mm-hmm. but it's much more like
tiles
widget. Like on the homepage, like everything on the main screen is widgets as opposed to a list of programs, which maybe is not helpful. I don't know.
The way I kind of looked at it was like, it's almost like your phone dashboard where you just take a look at it. It has all your recent, you know, texts or whatever. And it's not just a big list of apps, like you said. One thing I never really liked was like the primary color mm-hmm. interface.
Right.
But that's probably just me.
Right. No, I agree. It's not very... fantastic.
So I don't know. Did you mention if Microsoft had a play in that? Like, did they pay Nokia to adopt or anything?
I don't know if they did or not. Mm-hmm. I would be very surprised if there wasn't some sort of financial
right.
arrangement or other quote unquote arrangement.
Right.
I know Steve Ballmer was there for the announcement, mm-hmm. so he may have had some sort of.
It's all about Nokia. Nokia.
Quote unquote Nokia. Arrangement with the Nokia guy, but
right.
I can't say that I have extremely disliked Windows Phone operating systems in the past. Donnie and I both had Palms mm-hmm. in the past running the Windows OS, and it was good for what it was. I guess it just wasn't as sexy as the other ones.
Right.
It did what you needed it to do and woke me up in the mornings with the alarm and right. kept my calendar, so...
Right.
That's all you can ask, really.
That's all you can ask, really. And I did like the keyboard on it. That wasn't Windows. That was just the phone itself.
It had a hardware keyboard.
Yeah.
Hardware keyboard that Windows installed. Steve Ballmer actually installed that himself.
For you.
For me.
Right.
Am I next or is Dave next?
It's up to you.
I'll go next okay. because
that's fine.
My battery's about to die.
That's a good reason to go.
On this piece of paper.
AOL.
It's a mighty big tablet you have there, sir.
Purchases The Huffington Post. The Huffington Post, if you're not familiar, is a very left-wing liberal online news site. A lot of breaking news things, I guess. Sometimes when I hear rumor stories or crazy stories out there, the first place I see a post on it is the Huffington Post. And I would actually say I follow the Huffington Post somewhat for my news. But then sometimes in the back of my head, I am always questioning the truthfulness of the posts. And I'm sure it's, you know, it's pretty reputable, but I've always questioned that every time, I guess, I really think about the Huffington Post. I guess the surprising thing here was how left-wing Huffington Post is, and AOL is fairly neutral. In listening to NPR on the subject, I think that they said they thought that AOL is kind of just throwing things out there and really hoping for something to catch on. They can no longer send out discs to everyone's email or to everyone's mailbox, hoping that you'll sign up for their dial-up internet service. They just need something to keep them afloat, or else they'll just continue to diminish. And I think right now they're still profitable at this point. I don't know how anyone can be profitable printing out that many discs and sending them out to people. And having how many AOL subscribers had you known in the past? I've known none, pretty much.
At least 500,000.
You know a lot of people, though.
Right.
I mean, that's probably only 1% of the people you know.
I rolled deep.
So I thought it was surprising. I don't know how huge it's going to be. It'll be interesting to see what direction the Huffington Post goes in the future. Is it going to still be as liberal as it was? Will AOL purchase a right-wing news source?
If you're asking me, I don't know how I'm supposed to know.
No. You have the inside information, so if you could tell me.
I just don't have a connect there.
Oh.
I'm connected with a lot of people who use AOL.
Okay. The dial-up still, right?
Dial-up still. But I don't know anyone who actually works there.
Right. I know the little yellow guy from the Instant Messenger logo.
Right.
You know him personally?
Yeah. Yeah, we go way back.
Good. That's about it for that post. I mean, I'm sure there's more to talk about, but it really doesn't matter.
Can you tell it's a Friday afternoon and we're ready to leave the office?
Yeah.
And not run over mailboxes.
Or get stuck in the driveway. My final, last little news story was TweetDeck announced a new feature called deck.ly this week. And basically what it does is if you have problems where you're constantly tweeting over the 140-character limit, it will actually shorten it for you. It's like kind of like a URL shortener. So if you're looking at it on Twitter.com, it'll start the tweet, and then it'll say, okay, click here to read this full tweet. And I don't think they have a size limit. You can kind of go for as long as you want.
Go forever.
But it's kind of cool in the TweetDeck application because it'll just automatically get thrown in there if you're using TweetDeck and someone uses the deck.ly extension, then it'll just show up as normal. One thing that Josh kind of raised was whether this is really a good thing for Twitter because that 140-character limit has been such, I don't know, like it's so highly associated with Twitter, and it's a good way to differentiate between what becomes a blog post or what becomes a tweet. I don't know if you guys ever have any trouble where you're trying to fit a whole thought into 140 characters. I certainly have had that before, but it's not to the point where I really think I need to.
You know, I have the problem when I'm tweeting something in, the hopes that it will get retweeted, and if somebody wants to elaborate on or say something about what I use all 140 characters, that's just selfish of me, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
Or I'm retweeting somebody, and I would like to elaborate on it myself. That's selfish of the tweeter that did it originally.
Yes.
Sure.
I guess it came to my attention, Mike Schneider on Twitter, he's at Schneider Mike, posted something that said, the release of deck.ly truly shows that TweetDeck doesn't understand Twitter, really. I mean, Twitter is supposed to be short, to the point, and if you're creating a tweet that's 700 characters long, it's not a tweet.
Right.
You know, that's for a different platform.
Right.
So, I guess that's my take on it, and I think you said that in your post.
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%. It's just a nice way to, I think the brevity of Twitter
like
in particular is, it's a good word, isn't it? Yeah. I'm proud of that.
You're good with that.
Is something that I can appreciate. And like I said, it's a good way to differentiate between putting something into a blog post, which can be, you know, multiple paragraphs, or just something that's a random or quick thought that you kind of throw out into the Twitter sphere. So
quick thought like, Luda!
Luda!
Your boy!